ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Monday. Corbin Middlemass with you. Of course, it is AFL Monday time. You're offering every single Monday, where I'm joined by Ben Cameron in studio, along with the Carlton champion 300 gamer Mark Murphy. Don't forget ABC AFL Daily. If you're listening to this show, but you're not listening to any of the others, five drops a week. Every single Monday, Mark Murphy joins Ben and myself in studio. On Tuesday, I'm joined by Bob Murphy as we review the footy shows. Of course, that set the agenda on a Monday night. We pull apart all the key bits and debate it on a Tuesday. Fast forward to later in the week on a Thursday, Brett Delidio stops by, joins Ben and myself for a full preview, a key question from each of the games. On Saturday, it is the award-winning AFL Saturday with myself, Corbin Middlemass, the game's record holder, Mick Malthouse, the coaching icon, and Luke Ball, the premiership pie. And then on Sunday, to round out the weekend, your Sunday takeaway, the key thing from each of the games that have been completed across the weekend, Ben Cameron and Daniel Harford, to get you right on a Monday morning on your way into work or school or whatever you're up to. Perfect recap of the weekend, Ben and Harf. So that's your offering every week here through ABC AFL Daily. Let's get into it.
Sends a barrel inside 50. It bounces wide of
Smart.
Ollie Henry knocks it on the Bose, who dribbles it towards the goal mouth and dribbles through a goal. The Caps finish on a high.
No, Scott won't play next week. We're unashamed. Yeah, plan to play him the week after. We'll go into plan with his body and things.
Jones again, slugging the tackle, keeps his feet, handballs it off, and a score will do. A score might just do for the Western Bulldogs. Gallagher with the behind.
It's going to be heartbreak again for Port Adelaide. And the Western Bulldogs get sweet relief. They hang on at the death.
I don't coach for my job. I coach for building a culture. And, hopefully by the time I leave here is that, we've got winning behaviours and I understand clearly what that looks like.
On 774 ABC Melbourne,
ABC Sport Digital,
and ABC Listen.
This is AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben.
It certainly is. We are nine rounds down into the AFL Premiership season. We've got a whole lot to chop up. Felt like the weekend started strong, faded late. Must be said, the first five games of the weekend decided by an average winning margin of 10 points. And from that point on, the average winning margin had ballooned out to beyond six goals for the last four games of the weekend. So good early, a little soft late, but a whole lot to chop up here on AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben. And as always, the Carlton champion Mark Murphy is in the house. To Murphy in just a moment. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Ben Cameron's across the desk from me. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Corbin. Good to be here. We just heard the audio of the winning moments for the Western Bulldogs over Port Adelaide. It did remind me. Mm-hmm. I was driving, I think, in here on Friday. I'm not sure. I think we had a meeting in here on Friday. That's why heading in. And I was driving around there past the tan, and I saw these two dogs zipping towards the road. And I hit the brakes pretty hard, took evasive action. Luckily, the dogs sort of zigged at the last moment and didn't go on the road. And I've looked over, and there's this woman walking the dogs, sort of saying, come back here, come back here.
Yep.
And I looked at the person, I thought, that's Marcus Bontempelli's partner, Neela. I thought, gee whiz, imagine if I had hit my favourite player's dog driving into work. Like, that would have been an unmitigated disaster. It was a game day for the Bulldogs. So I had to call their media manager. I said, does Bont have a Kelpie? He said, yeah, he does. I said, yeah, mate, I nearly hit it just down the backside of the tan. So I'm very grateful that the top dog still has man's best friend, his dog, running around.
Oh, that's a scary moment to be involved in. That's a good. That's a good ending to the story on what could have been catastrophic on that front. 1-300-222-774, the talkback number, AFL Monday with Corbin and Ben. And the Carlton champion is here, the man who the coaches voted as the premier player in the game back in 2011. 300 gamer, former Carlton captain, Mark Murphy. Hello, Murph.
Corbin, Ben, good to be here with you to start. I was wondering where that story was going to go.
So yeah.
Thankfully, it all ended well. Could see that Corbin's a bit rattled by the way in which that story transpired.
It's an unusual way to start,
wasn't
but
it?
We're into it.
We are well and truly into it. If I had a gong, I would have gonged him, I reckon, halfway through. I could sense it was going nowhere.
maybe it'll lead to a talkback topic. Have you ever almost hit your favourite player's dog? 1-300-222-774.
And the bond wasn't there.
No bond.
No bond.
Okay.
Oh, maybe we should give Murph a gong that if he thinks a talkback call is going too long, he can gong them Red Simon style.
Oh, that maybe that's the way to go. All right, plenty to come tonight. The Pies exposed on the weekend. How deep are their troubles? MRO news involving Keziah Pickett and Zach Butters from the weekend. Plus all your usual favourite segments, our Mad Mondays with Murph. Your calls on 1-300-222-774. Winners and losers, and I hear that we've been inundated with the unicorn list. If you listen to this show every Monday night, Ben's got a theory that the word unicorn is way too overused in the footy vernacular, and that there is supporting evidence for that theory. You got some supporting arguments for your premise. We'll get to that in the back end of the program. But to kick us off, Ben.
Yeah, it's a big week for budgets.
It is.
So the budget is going to be unveiled tomorrow night.
Some people think the budget conversation can be a little dry, and yet here we are bringing budget talk to the footy landscape.
So Jim Chalmers tomorrow night. Then on Thursday night, I think we get the budget in reply from the opposition. So the footy budget, where are you spending your money at the moment? Where are you allocating more funds to? Where are you taking it from? That's the question I'm asking. Now, to simplify it a little bit for people and you and Murph, I mean, there was an underlying operating surplus of essentially $68 million last year for the AFL. So 68 mil in the skyrocket. Where are you spending that money? Where can that money go to improve our game? Do you have an obvious landing spot for it initially, Corb?
That's a good question. 1-300-222-774. So where are you putting money into? Where are you taking money out of? I think clearly the one that's dominating conversation at the moment is the mental health space in the game, isn't it? Clearly, we've just had mandates come down from the AFL about full-time psychs. We also had a couple of people on speaking about that across the weekend, which we'll get to in just a moment. But I think that's one in particular that clearly is going to need some attention. I don't necessarily subscribe to the AFL's theory that the person needs to be full-time, but I think they should be there on key days during the week when they get a chance to interact with the playing group, and then in and around match day, clearly. Some other areas in particular, I think a popular answer here is going to be country footy and community footy, isn't it? I mean, you look at even country footy clubs like Lara, for example, down Geelong way. They're not even fielding a team this year, which there's been a lot of articles on when you think community football clubs that need a little bit more funding. So that would be one. And here's a controversial one for you, Ben. I actually think the push into India, stay with me, is worth the time and the money. So I think that...
You still got your gong, Murph?
I'm just getting it ready. It's starting to warm it up.
Even if you're able to capture 2% of that market, country of a billion people, not to mention lots of expats in and around, or right around the world, but here in Australia, I think if... there is obvious crossover in terms of the grounds. I mean, Australian rules football was born as basically something for the cricketers to do during the winter months. So there's lots of oval-shaped venues that are already available in India, billion eyeballs and everything else. I think if you can make some kind of headway and some kind of inroads in that particular market, I think that'll be huge for the game. And even if it's 1 or 2%, I think that's worth the squeeze from an AFL perspective.
It's going to cost a lot of money. Going to cost a lot of money to get traction in that market, isn't it?
Yeah, but we're a country of 26 million people. If you're a country of a billion people and you can somehow get 1% or whatever it turns out to be, that's still a couple of million eyeballs or whatever it turns out to be on your product.
I still think the development of our game needs to be better with our grassroots football. And I'm not sure if it's just my little bit of exposure with some Auskick clinics, but I think the way in which they're run sometimes can almost be a bit of a child minding sort of centre sometimes. And the really good clubs at local level really invest a lot of time and have great volunteers doing that. So I think having some more support from AFL House would be good in terms of just teaching our kids, boys and girls, basic skills better than probably what they are. I remember being at VicKick back in the day, and it was all about just skill progression and working on your hands and your kicking and your marking. I think now it's sort of a bit more of a child-minding exercise for a lot of these junior clubs and Auskick centres.
Right, so it's like daycare as opposed to skill development.
Yeah, well, I still remember going to my first one. There was stations of tug of war and like almost a bit of chasey and stuff like that, and there was only a few small skill development sessions. So that was the really surprising thing from my end. obviously wasn't too well aware of that, but getting players and AFL House to actually invest more time at really young levels of teaching that skill development is really important.
So just a couple of points on it. Nearly $100 million does go into game development. That was a 2022 AFL Commission decision to send 10% of the game's revenue into game development, but whether that is enough is the debate that's ongoing. Dan has texted in early on. He says, with Sir Doug Nicholls round coming up, more money to boosting Indigenous participation, please, which is a common thread at the moment. I mean, Mitch Cleary reported during the week that there is going to be an additional list spot put aside for First Nations footballers, and Andy Gowers, the Hawthorn president, spoke to that this morning on Raph Epstein's show.
This is a fantastic move. The more that we can make it more possible for Indigenous players to play at the top level, the better. And, you know, I've been thinking about this broadly. And when I think about the most exciting players in the competition, a lot of them are Indigenous. I think of our own team, Jarman Ipi, Carl Amon and others. But I think of Cozzy Pickett. I think of Liam Ryan and so on. And over the journey, we could rattle off dozens of names. It's an Indigenous game. It's our Indigenous game, and I think our Indigenous players tend to be the most electric and the best to watch. And I think the more that we can make the pathway easier for Indigenous players, the better our game will be.
It's a good call out, and particularly when you think it wasn't that long ago. I actually think Stephen May had a run probably of about 4 or 5 years where he was the best First Nations player in the game. And that's no knock on Stephen May, but I don't think anyone thought at any particular stage Stephen May was in the top 5, 10, 20, 15 players in the game overall. And yet you look at it now, and I don't think it's overly controversial to say two of the top 5 are First Nations players. So you would have Cozzy in there, as you mentioned, Naziah.
Yep.
So all of a sudden we've got not just that the First Nations players that we do have, which is a much smaller number than it was going back a couple of years ago, but the top-end talent is elite. So we clearly need to get more and more First Nations players playing the game.
I know you're not a big fan of Ross Lyon, but I didn't actually mind what he said over the weekend about playing in the NT and teams having to do the heavy lifting and going out there and playing, because the more the game's exposed at that level up there for our Indigenous youth to watching that live is going to enhance their ability to pick up the game more and want to be part of it and want to play AFL football.
Let's have a listen to what Ross had to say and then we'll hit the phones. Ed's first up from Adelaide.
We loved it, you know. Like, what is it, dry season? Ground's great, good energy in the crowd. And look, I caught up with Magic Michael McLean this morning. Like, probably the opportunity for the AFL is play 9 games there. Every team come and play a game here. Imagine the Darwin with 9 games for the year. Why give it to one club and 2 games? Like, sure, they get government support. Everyone do some heavy lifting for the territory. They produce great players. I think we talk about expansion. Why not just everyone just share the 9 games, which is like that?
What are you doing with the footy budget? 1-300-222-774, the talkback number. How many games do you play up there, Murph?
I reckon I played quite a few handful of pre-season games in the Alice. I played 1 game against Gold Coast up in Darwin back in 2021. That was during COVID, but it was already going to be up there. I had a great time playing up there. I love the wet conditions, the slippery conditions, being hot. The atmosphere was electric. We had a good win, so it was good. Good memories.
Yeah. That wouldn't be St Kilda whinging again, would it? Oh. They've got 10 of their next 14 games at Docklands, so are they complaining about that?
Spent a week in Adelaide. They were going to Darwin. They come back home for 1 week, then they've got to go to Perth. It's not the...
The Perth teams travel every second week as well, Corbin. You're aware of that, yeah?
Yeah, it's nothing against that. It's more that, you look at their draw compared to a lot of other teams.
What happened to anywhere, anytime, Ross? Now is some places, some
I
of the time.
I thought he was being positive.
He's just saying every other team should have a go at that. Ed's the first of our callers from Adelaide, 1-300-222-774. Hello, Ed.
Howdy, boys. Just wanted to say what I'm mad about this Monday. Brought my girlfriend, who is from Ireland, Gaelic player, to the footy on Friday. Explained a few rules to her, and I promise it's not my explanation of the rules, but watching the game, she couldn't understand what was going on. The rules have too much interpretation open to them. I think we need to slim it down, make it more clear-cut. I love that the rules are constantly being built upon to make the game more entertaining, but unfortunately they are too difficult for anyone outside the game to understand, especially if we are going to build the game more internationally.
It's a good call, Ed. I mean, the good news for you and your partner who you took along is that a lot of the time we don't know what's happened when a free kick is paid these days. Like, it's become increasingly like rugby union, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And that was almost going to be my next point about what can we spend some of the budget on. Mm. And the one thing I'd be interested to know is if these umpires are travelling greater distance in their game. I wouldn't have thought being four on-field umpires, whether how many Ks they can actually tick over in a game. So finding out those GPS results and then going to a full-time model where you're paying the best umpires double what they're currently getting and they might be able to do two games a week.
Well, I've spoken to it seems like the umpires often don't want to go to a full-time model. So if we...
But if you paid them double...
Yeah, maybe they would. Maybe they would. The other thing is investing some of that money into umpire training and the best possible umpire coaches and having a home facility for them, I think, is of critical importance. So I'd be putting a lot of that money into that, if nothing else. Some good text here. Marty says, AFL game development, I would suggest, is a very broad and loose category. We paid a premium for our kids' Auskick that was totally volunteer run, and country leagues and clubs get nothing from the AFL.
1-300-222-774. More of your Mad Mondays coming up as well. 1-300-222-774. Corbin and Ben on AFL Monday on 774 ABC Melbourne and across Victoria with the Carlton superstar Mark Murphy in the house. Let's talk about the Pies. They were never your favourite team, Murph, of course. You famously attended a grand final and rooted against them wearing the West Coast Eagles colours back in 2018, which upset a few people, it must be said. You gave them the bird, the cheer squad, so the Pies have never been overly close to your heart.
No.
What do you make of where the Magpies find themselves at the moment? It felt like they got exposed a little bit on the weekend again. So after some better performances, particularly that draw that we witnessed against the Hawks, all of a sudden they were on the wrong side of a beatdown, 54-point loss to Geelong. They'd only kicked five goals up until a three-quarter time.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because... I thought prior to the season they were going to slip away and miss the top 10. So it's not really surprised me all that much, but I still think that's an early pile-on to say that they've got to rebuild. I mean, there's some calls about their list being pretty poor at this point in time. And I think they certainly need to go out and be pretty positive in the way in which they go about building their list and getting some star players in, because I think they should have some money there to go with that. But I'd like to see another probably month of how they actually go before you start going, oh, they need to just really strip it all back and almost start over. They've got the best player in the comp. Darcy Moore got injured. He's had a really interrupted year, hasn't he, their skipper. And then at the same time too, Geelong's a tough one to look at too. Every second week they put in a shocker and they play really well. So they're a hard one to analyse. They've been going okay, Collingwood without striking the light fantastic. So I'll just see another month of how they're going to go about it. But I back in what Craig McRae has done previously and what he can do with this list going forward. But there's no doubt they need to try and add some more talent to help out Nick Dacos especially.
Oldest list in the competition, most experienced. Fewest top 20 picks, so they've only got 8 on their list. For context, GWS have 21, and the second most is Gold Coast and Essendon, who have 18. Collingwood have 8. Even in the prelim last year, so guys 22 years of age or younger, Brisbane had 8. Hawthorn 7, Geelong 4, Collingwood 2. So only two guys 22 or younger. Interestingly, you look at their injury list, it's only really Cameron and Perryman, maybe Membry, but again at the back end of his career. So their depth is thin. That pretty much what they've got now is what they've got. I was chatting to my good friends at Champion Data today, and Corey's all over this kind of stuff. He was talking about the fact that their game style has changed. So interestingly, last year they went long down the line a lot, and they got numbers at the drop, and that's how they basically went to work. But essentially nowadays they're going fast and lateral, so trying to defend with ball in hand, open up the ground. So we're seeing a slightly different change in style from them. It'll be interesting to see what that translates to in the long run as to how much the change in their game style will ultimately get them where they want to go.
Yeah, you pull that forward, and it is a bit of a worry. But the only thing that I looked back at when I first, well, before I came in here, was the week prior they played against Hawthorn. And I consider Hawthorn to be the second best team in it at the moment, and they drew with them the week before. So I think sometimes you can go too early and get too carried away and say, well, they got beaten by Geelong, who have just been paddling, but we know how good Geelong have been over the long period of time, and they played some great footy over the last couple of years. The Cats, we know how good they can be. So I wouldn't be singing alarm bells just yet if I was Collingwood, but I think they need to go hard at a few guys probably in their mid-20s who are stars of the comp.
Like who? Who are you going after if you're Collingwood?
I think you're going as hard as you can for Zach Butters.
Yep.
Yep.
I think that's the obvious one. I think there'd be a lot of clubs in that realm of going for him. And biggest club in the land, play along Nick Dacos. He's one that I'd be offering anything and everything to.
David King's been talking about the fact that Nick Dacos needs to play more forward centre. So obviously we've seen that striker role. I mean, you want him in every area in the ground. You want him on the back flank in the midfield and everything else.
I want him out of the side at the moment. I want him to have a rest. Oh, I think he's hobbled.
Wow.
I don't think he's going at full rat power. And
you want the Scott Pendlebury treatment, just sit one out.
Yep. Oh, I think he needs a break. We did the game against Hawthorn. You pointed it out. He got treatment right throughout the Q3 break, three-quarter time break. He's definitely hobbled.
No one's indestructible, and people can get tired. And it was only a few weeks prior to that where he looked terrible and pulled out prior to the game. And then he was trying to shake his leg out quite a bit during that Hawthorn game, which alludes to the fact that something's going on in his hip area, his lower leg. So you might be right. There might be just something at play there where he needs to have a bit of a rest, but I just can't afford it at the moment.
Ben, which teams you put in a line through? This is AFL Monday, by the way, with Corbin and Ben and the Carlton champion Mark Murphy. Your calls on 1-300-222-774.
I think this follows on from Collingwood naturally. I think I'm willing to put a line through Collingwood. I don't think they can...
Not top 10?
I don't think they can win it this year. No, so...
Are we not doing top 10? We're just doing can they win it?
Yeah, so right. I'm willing to put they a line through it. Richmond, Carlton, Essendon, West Coast, Port, the Giants, North, St Kilda and Collingwood. I don't think any of those teams can win it at the moment. So that's nine teams.
So you basically drawn a line at halfway.
Yeah.
You said anyone lower than that is not a premiership team. What do you reckon, Murph?
Yeah, I don't think they can win it at all, the Pies. And I'll look around them. I don't think the Bulldogs can win it this year either. And I had them as one of my picks at the start of this season. I'm just trying to look at who's a chance of coming into that top 10 when I look at the current teams outside of that. And the teams that I think can force their way in are probably North Melbourne and St Kilda if they can get going.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think Collingwood almost will miss from here.
And who are the teams that are winning it?
Well, I've got Brisbane still number one. I've got Hawthorn and Sydney is my equal second at this point in time, and Freo is my fourth.
Freo can win it. Can Geelong win it?
I don't think so.
Wow. Okay, you're going skinny. So the four teams Murph's got in there. Brisbane, Hawthorn, Sydney, Fremantle is the teams in premiership contention.
I'm very risk averse, as you know, so I like to leave it as wide open as I can. A few texts coming through. Agree with the previous caller. Rules are far too complicated now. People keep trying to change the rules to bring back some nostalgic, better time of the footy in the 1980s. Need to get back. This is a different text. Need to get back to basic rules. All of the provisions are there for fast, exciting play. Another text without a name. It would have been good to have a name on this one. But hi, boys. Budget. A portion for retired players, especially regarding the compensation situation for concussion, as well as those players who leave the system and find themselves a bit lost. There is a little bit of an annuity scheme, isn't there, Murph, that retired players do get for a period of time?
Yeah, there is. And I think it's probably a good shout. And I know that the general public might look at that and go, well, they get paid so well during their football careers. But it is a really tough transition for a lot of players who, whether you've played 4 years or 16, I was with a large group of players who I used to play football with over the weekend, and we were talking about this exact thing, and it sometimes takes you 3 or 4 years to really work out where you're best suited to go into that next phase of your life. And you leave the game putting everything into AFL football. Only the really smart ones have a really strong plan and actually stick to that throughout their football career. But you've got to take a pill to say, you know what, I've got to go back and do some study or do some work and not be paid that well and really work my way back up before you actually start getting somewhere professionally. So it does take time. The AFLPA try and help you on that journey, but it is a tough ask for a lot of players.
MRO news, so Kazai Pickett free to play this weekend, and he wasn't cited really at all here, so they did give an explanation saying he had his eyes fixed on the ball. He decelerated when he knew he was going to make contact with Jake Waterman, took possession of the ball, lowered his body, dropped his arm to minimise the contact, and as a result, he did not elect to bump, and it was not unreasonable in the circumstances. So, happy with that?
That's where I saw it, yep.
Yep, and obviously we learned earlier in the weekend, Zach Butters too free to play. Also, he wasn't culpable for the damage that he caused.
I thought he should have been.
Yeah.
He went past the ball, which is a bit of a worry.
This is AFL Monday. Corbin and Ben with Mark Murphy in the house. Your calls on 1300 222 774. Winners and losers, Ben's unicorn list all on the way. Plus, what are you mad about this Monday? You got one for us to get us going, Ben?
Heaps of texts coming in around Mad Monday. So Phil in Victoria says, mad. He says, g'day, boys, Phil and Vic. Lockie Neal, his offhanded comment about doing a Carlton. Bad taste, humility gone out the window.
This bit.
Got told by a couple of the boys we were doing a Carlton, so they were trying to get in our heads a little bit, but that's part of the game. And, glad that we held on. It was pretty close, but, like I said, take it and move on to Geelong next week.
So you're caught in the middle there, Murph. That's your man, Lockie Neal, and your team, Carlton.
But that was the way in which I heard that was that the Carlton boys were giving him stick saying you're doing Carlton.
It wasn't the Brisbane boys saying that.
I think Phil misheard it slightly or misunderstood it the first time he heard it.
Which is quite good, though, from the Carlton boys, I thought.
It's good humour. Good humour. Self-deprecating.
Yes, it is.
Mark from Watsonia says, mad about 4 days between rounds. Do you know how many times I've missed my footy tips for the Thursday night game? That's a common thread. I also had Adam O, who reached out to me and said, I'm mad, and I want you to save this for Monday night. This was on Friday morning, about the Perth Stadium surface.
Okay.
So it's always looked pretty average. It's looked like a little bit of a dung heap, so to speak. But
what's the story there?
Players were slipping around like it was an ice skating rink on Thursday night.
So my understanding is here that there's two different types of turf that they use, right? One for the summer months, one for the winter months. Now, I'm not a horticulturalist or anything like that. I don't understand how it all works. But I would have thought in a brand new stadium, can we not get the same type of grass that's like consistent all year round? And so as a result, when they change from the old grass to the new grass, it always looks patchy and people are slipping over. It's an unusual issue. I know people in the West are very sensitive about it and feels like we're taking shots at their shiny new stadium and everything else. Hey, stadium's great.
Stadium's great.
No problems about that. But the weird part is, how have you got a brand new stadium and the turf doesn't look outstanding all the time? Like, for example, a lot of other grounds around the country, but it just doesn't even present well on TV. And a lot of people say, no, it doesn't have to look good to be, play good and everything else. Feel like, one, it doesn't look good. Two, it doesn't necessarily play well.
Players were slipping over on Thursday night. Nate also messaged me and said that they were really disappointed as a Fremantle fan. No recognition for the Dockers on the Perth Now website on Friday morning about their win. The lead story was around a bin falling off the back of a bin truck, and they felt like the Fremantle Dockers going to the top of the AFL ladder deserved more love on Perth Now.
What are you mad about this Monday? Best way to get in touch with us is to give us a call on 1300 222 774. Winners and losers coming up, plus Ben's unicorn list. Have you got one for us, Murph? Is there one that stands out?
Just on the Perth, so the time frame, obviously we know what it is, but Thursday night football in WA, too late a start. Was it 8:10 start?
So how's this? I spoke to my dad who went. He's a Fremantle member. He was complaining the other way. Too early. So it's not good for them. It's not good for us on the east coast of the country. I agree. I'm not sure this is the way to go. So I'm interestingly, the AFL is going to release the remaining time slots for round 16 to 22, I think either tomorrow or the next day. And doubleheaders on the Friday night are staying. Feels like the perfect thing for the second game on a Friday, doesn't it? Play one game in Perth at a proper night game. The problem that they've got locally is that at 6:10 as the game starts, you're essentially using the same buses and trains to get people to the footy for the commute home.
Yeah, so I understand that.
Yeah.
But still, like, I think for the time zone issue and to watch it on TV, for us to be able to have to stay up till 10:45 to watch that game of football, it just doesn't work well. And none of the tradies who I spoke to on the Friday morning could stay up and watch the football. They're all in bed by 9.
I agree.
They start early. Tim from Preston says, hi, Corbin and Ben and Murph. So last week I tried to buy tickets for my mum and I to go to the MCG on Sunday to watch the Richmond and Adelaide game, and the ticketing site said that all the tickets at ground level had been sold. We couldn't get seats anywhere near the action, so rather than sitting in the gods on level 4, we went to the pub. Turns out 4 out of 5 seats at the G on Sunday were empty. What's that all about?
22,000 people went, and you can't get multiple seats next to each other on the ground level. That can't be right, can it?
Well, it must be.
No, I'm saying I'm not saying it can't be right.
It shouldn't be right.
Yeah, I don't doubt Tim's version of events.
No,
but that's pretty ordinary, isn't it? Where someone that wants to go to the footy can't in that particular scenario, and that's two more people we could have had at the game yesterday.
It's a miss for me.
Yep. 1-300-222-774. What are you mad about on this Monday out of round 9 of the AFL Premiership season? Just a little quirky one, Ben. The votes for the AFL Coaches Association get released every Monday. We've been banging on all year about the three best players in the competition in whatever order, Bontempelli, Butters, Nick Dacos, all tied at the top of the tree on 50 votes as it sits at the moment. So coaches in agreement that they're clearly the three best, and you can argue about the order. But it was the game between GWS and Essendon that caught my attention. And unfortunately, Murph, we can't put your Footballer of the Year votes against this game. Out of a possible 10 players, Brad Scott and Adam Kingsley came back with 9. Nine unique players polled a vote in this game. So 5 for Ash, 5 for Callaghan, 4 for Whitfield, 4 for Roberts, 3 for Durham, 3 for Wright, 3 for Toby Green, 2 for Daniels, 1 for Oliver. So the breakdown of the votes there suggests that essentially we've had 2 lots of 5s, 2 lots of 4s, 3 3s, 1 1 and 1 2. So essentially what I'm trying to say here is there was only one player that polled votes from both coaches.
Yep.
And that was one of the guys that got
three.
That got three.
Yeah.
So either Durham, Wright, or Toby Green. Which means both Kingsley and Brad Scott, the three top players on the ground, they disagreed. Disagreed. How's that for a spread? Amazing.
It's not great, is it? That just shows you that the coaches have seen it differently than the opposition one. But usually the coaches, they know what.
I've never quite seen something like that. The Bombers also got the Rising Star this week too, so well done to Sully Roby, who got the round 9 nod.
Yeah, one of our winners out of the round just gone, no doubt. The Wharfie time activation, another one of those, undoubtedly. I just want to go back to Ross Lyon and his comments around Darwin and what he said there. And I've been hard on St Kilda and the whinging Saints, etc. I just want to ask you though, Murph, when you were playing football, when did you feel like your physical prime was? Like what ages?
I think from probably 22 to 27.
22 to 27?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, Ben was hoping you were going to say
slightly later.
I was hoping you were going to say about 27
but anyway,
to 30.
Everyone's different though, like I've had injuries and the rest of it. But yeah, play on.
Well, my point stands. So I've just looked at Jack Steele and the evolution of his career. Pre-Ross Lyon, with Ross Lyon, post-Ross Lyon. So 2020 to 2022, keeping in mind that 2020 we had shortened games, he was a player that averaged one Brownlow vote per game during that period. Then he also averaged virtually over 3.5 coaches' votes per game. Then Ross Lyon comes in 2023. His disposals go down, his contested possessions go down, his clearances go down, and so too do his Brownlow votes and coaches' votes, like I've alluded to. That is when he's sort of 27, 28, 29, which I thought would have been his physical prime. Then in 2026, he obviously is no longer with Ross Lyon. He's seemingly through his physical prime. He's not at St Kilda anymore. His disposals go back up. His contested possessions go back up. His clearances go back up. His coaches' votes, you guessed it, are up as well. So like it felt like to me that through his physical prime, there was a precipitous decline for Jack Steele. And then it shot back up. So I think we all accept that Ross Lyon is an incredibly smart coach and he's a really, really good coach. But he clearly wasn't able to get the best out of Jack Steele. And that is the art of coaching, turning the plus sign into a multiplication symbol so that your team is better than the sum of its parts rather than just the addition of it. Is that fair, Murph?
Yeah, it's a fair... You've analysed that well. I think sometimes coaches get the best out of certain blokes and sometimes a way in which coaches coach doesn't suit some players as well. So maybe it was just the way in which he wanted the game to be run and the game style didn't really suit a Jack Steele. And he's left there. He's not captain anymore. He's taking the shackles off, a fresh start. He's enjoying the helter-skelter way of playing that he's under at the Melbourne Demons Football Club this point in time and really enjoying his football. It's great to see someone who looked like he was well and truly finishing up and looked outside of his prime, as you did say, is looking fresh and renewed and playing some great football.
Precipitous decline was probably too much. Like it was a dip. Yeah, I wouldn't. Okay. I think that's probably actually unfair to say that it was a precipitous decline.
1-300-222-774 is the talkback number. Let us know what you think. Now, Mad Mondays with Murph. A couple of things out of the weekend, Murph. So the curious case of Carlton. We love giving your opinion every Monday on how the Blues went. This was bizarre. So it was the other way round. They played one half of footy, but it was after the game was seemingly over at halftime and they came home with the proverbial wet sail. Is this progress? How should Carlton fans feel about what happened last Friday?
I don't know. I think I think every Carlton fan would have gone, yeah, look, I think that would be, every Carlton fan would be happy that it didn't go the other way and the old way that it's been going for eight of the first games this season. But I think the way in which they fought through, got within a kick and looked like they're going to run over the top of a side who is, I think in your book, still premiership favourites, aren't they, Corbin?
Number one.
They've won the last two flags, obviously, and done that quite easily. I think to go up there under the pressure they've been on under as well, I think was pretty important. Some of their leaders shone and played some great football, and I think the one shining light that we haven't really seen too much from this year is Harry Mackay, way in which he played. And we know how good a defender they've got up there in terms of, what's his name again?
Harris.
Against him, and watching some of his football on Friday night, I thought that Harry looked like he was back to some of that best, getting up and being strong hands and strong in the contest, going back and kicking his goals. So I thought that was a really encouraging sign.
It felt to me, watching it, like it was hard to say they weren't playing for Michael Voss or there wasn't a great deal of effort given what they did in the second half. The list just isn't that good. Is that a fair assessment of where the list is at the moment? Like, would anybody else be able to get that? Maybe they'd be going better than where they are at the moment, 1-8. I appreciate that. But would anyone be able to get anything meaningful out of this list at the moment, do you think, Murph?
It's a hard one. I mean, they've been in every game, haven't they? Except for probably St Kilda in that third term, and they're obviously in front at half time, and that was probably the first time they looked really, really poor against the Saints. But yeah, it's I think they need to make some list changes. There's no doubt about that. The list that they've got there at this point in time isn't getting it done, and I think anyone who has been in the game for any sort of period of time can see that. So they need to make some changes, and they certainly will.
Yeah, they played in a prelim in the not too distant past, and then the following year elimination finalists. And
I mean, it's a hard one, isn't it, too, when you look back and you look at that prelim and you see where Brisbane have gone to and what they've achieved. And
5 goals to zip up, by the way, Murph. I know you know because you were there.
I was there and I was getting ready for a big grand final week. But it's certainly been turned on its head since that point in time. And I think a lot of Carlton fans would be looking at that and thinking, oh, geez, imagine that could have been us. But unfortunately not. And they've got to do a lot of hard work to get themselves back in that space of being there in September.
Do you like the gold number that Scott Pendlebury's going to wear in his milestone game?
Not particularly.
No. Do you think he'll end up wearing it? It's garnered a lot of focus and attention. So game 4-3-3, it's going to be against West Coast Saturday fortnight, so he's not going to play this week in Sydney?
I think he'll probably still wear it. But, yeah, I just think football's a team game. As much as it's an individual accolade, I think just wear the number that he's worn with the rest of his teammates throughout that 430-odd games of football.
1-300-222-774. Let us know what you think. AFL Monday here with Corbin and Ben and the Carlton champion, Mark Murphy. All right, one thing we do every Monday, Ben.
The unicorn list. And I got a text about this earlier. I've just got to find it. I thought there's lots of good texts coming in.
So firstly, the unicorn list, if you're not aware, basically Ben Cameron set it down right at the start of the season. You can catch every episode of ABC AFL Daily wherever you get your podcasts, and essentially said, hey, I feel like there's way too many unicorns getting around in the AFL. The whole idea is it's a mythical creature. There's going to be one of them and everything else, and yet it's used and overused by commentators. So we thought, you know what? We're going to keep track of this and do an audit.
So Dave in Brunswick text in, I fear that Ben's campaign to prove the term unicorn is overused has become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Ooh.
Everyone was using it over the last week, in print, in game, online. It must feel good to know you've got such reach.
It's the power of this show.
But how does it feel to become the greatest champion of the very thing you sought to destroy? Which I think Dave's right. But anyway, forgetting all of that, let's run through it. So over the weekend, I mean, Luke Jackson, I think we've reached a consensus as to who the unicorn is. But Fox Footy on Thursday night, they were serial offenders. Three times over the course of the broadcast, Luke Jackson was referred to as a unicorn.
Speaking of purple, we've got a lovely purple graphic featuring the unicorn tonight. Luke Jackson.
The options, thought about it, had a little bit of time and got it to the unicorn.
You mentioned Luke Jackson. I mean, he was huge in that final quarter. What a weapon the unicorn is for your team.
You know, he really is a unicorn. I know people kind of say that flippantly with him, but he's unlike any other player I've seen.
Let's talk about the talls. One ruckman, particularly when it's the unicorn, Luke Jackson, proved more than enough for Frio against Hawthorn last night.
So that was Sarah Jones, Matt Hill, Kath Lochnan, Mason Cox, and Sally Sara, referring to Luke Jackson as the unicorn. I think also Ken Hinckley was meant to be in there. He was an offending right. party as well over the course of the weekend, referring to Luke Jackson as a unicorn. This was the moment that I knew we'd jump the shark. Just with a couple of examples here, Corb. Just roll the tape.
They've got such unicorns in their offense too. When you look at English burning Byzantine and sweet, it almost looks unfair.
So that was Lauren Arnell on the ABC coverage way back on Friday night, referencing lots of unicorns in the one team.
And not a blessing of unicorns, correct collective now.
Sorry, this was the moment when I thought, we've jumped the shark. ABC VFL TV coverage, we had a player in the VFL referred to as a unicorn.
No way.
Such an impressive physical specimen, Nathan Kruger. He's just had such a rotten run with injury. It just crueled his career, his knees, then his shoulder problems, which were ongoing. Because there's no doubt he's an AFL talent, but his body just let him down at critical times because he's a bit of a unicorn, Cal. The size and the way he moves and the fact he can play at either end.
Well, I don't think we can have unicorns in the VFL.
I'm just happy Matt Clinch didn't say it. That's what
it wasn't Clinchy. It was Jason Bennett, the offending party there. But
there's not too many unicorns getting around in the VFL.
No, I don't think we can have any of that. And then we had someone who labelled two different players unicorns in a 24-hour period.
This is what we feared right from the start, that it's okay, everyone can have one unicorn, but I get the feeling, Ben, there's somebody who's dubbed multiple players unicorns. Let's hear it.
Convince the long bomb to the very short forward line is going to work as the unicorn goes down. He's got a crook right knee, I think. You're looking at unicorn. This man is one.
That's my man, Jetta.
That was Jetta, who I'm a big fan of, but he was referring to Ethan Reid on Saturday night in Darwin as a unicorn. Then the very next day, he was doing the Adelaide game, Adelaide and Richmond, and he was referring to Riley Thilthorpe as a unicorn. So he's called two different players a unicorn in a 24-hour period. So Riley Thilthorpe is a new addition to the unicorn list.
Give me the list.
So the unique unicorns, Luke Jackson, Ethan Reid, Mark Blitzov, Sam Darcy, Dan Curtin, Job Shanahan, historical Justin Westhoff, Josh Weddle, and Riley Thilthorpe. I do give Jetta a bit of a free pass because he added to the football lexicon the Orange Tsunami, the Weagle's Web. He's been very creative.
He has.
But this is not it. I also had pointed out
Nathan Kruger's on there as well now.
Oh, I forgot Nathan Kruger. Sorry.
He's on the unicorn list.
Ryan Daniels, who is a news journo in Perth, he actually used it twice in a column in the West on I think Friday, and then there was another story which had it in the headline in the same paper. So just unbelievable.
Off the SMS, it's a worry that there's more unicorns running around than not. Ben, unicorns are a breed. They have one horn, but it doesn't mean there's only one of them. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know about magical creatures. Maybe ask Nick Watson from Tim in Cheltenham. Way too many unicorns. I think we can we can all agree on that front. But that is our blessing of unicorns, the collective now. There's lots of them being assembled. We'll keep track of them. If you hear them, by the way, as the season goes on, make sure you let us know here on AFL Monday. We'll try and contain the unicorns into one paddock.
It's out of control at the moment. I'm considering just expanding this too because there is another pandemic that is just sweeping across the footy media, and it is the use of the word peace. So people will talk about recovery peace, opportunity peace, connection piece.
The gratitude piece.
Gratitude piece. Like, the word peace is redundant. You do not need to say it. You can just say, look, we're looking at the opportunity. We're looking at connection. We're looking at gratitude. Yep. You know, we're trying to display more gratitude. It is. There's some serial offenders out there with that as well.
Winners and losers to finish, Murph. Give me a winner from the weekend. This is a sharp segue from talking about unicorns.
Caught up.
I'll give you a loser from the weekend, Corbin.
Yes.
timekeeping at the AFL, but maybe this was more of an addition than a loss, because they added 1 minute 49 to the clock somehow in the game between Geelong and Collingwood. So 1 minute 49 extra was played in the game. This was reported today, I think, by Pete Ryan first.
So how can that possibly be?
Well, they're saying human error in the timekeeper's box.
Right. So how many timekeepers have we got?
Two.
Mm. So both basically off the game.
To check that no one's, they basically guard so, against anything.
So, that,
no,
so, they so shouldn't, this couldn't happen.
So they shouldn't have restarted the, they should have restarted the clock when they didn't, basically. And then as a result, there's been another 109 seconds able to be added to the game.
Just imagine if that's a final or a big game, that there's finals dependence on that game.
If your glass half full
as a close
as a Collingwood fan, you'd be thinking, hey, it wasn't that bad. We had to play an extra 109 seconds, so maybe the scoreline's a bit more dramatic.
Yeah. That's not a good one. I've also got people messaging players on social media. So Josh Rochelli has shared, obviously, the message that he received in the wake of the game yesterday against Richmond. Would you see much of this, Murph, when you were playing? Would you go through your private Instagram inbox?
I've certainly seen some really bad ones over the journey, and I quickly learnt not to look at my social media post a loss, and I decided to do that post a win as well, because the more you read into things when you're doing them well, then you choose not to look at it when you're doing it not so well. That's the issue. So, I find it a huge issue, especially for these players this day and age of gambling, where people just absolutely annihilate players, don't they, with losing a multi or whatever it is. But people are just ruthless on social media. And if I was a player, I'd certainly be off it and not even look at any comments.
When a footy tipping's too easy. Eight of the top nine won on the weekend. Everyone gets seven minimum on the weekend. It's need a bit more jeopardy. Winner also, Wharfie time. I think we like that, the big button that someone hits and all of a sudden the stadium goes berserk. I think we all enjoyed what that gave Fremantle the other night, and we've seen a couple of times. But I did ask Justin Lomuor on AFL Saturday, which you can hear, by the way, through ABC AFL Daily, as to whether he controls it. And he said, look, if I controlled it, I would have been hitting it in the second quarter. So.
This one's not really the biggest loser, but I just think the upside could have been huge for North Melbourne on the weekend.
Yep.
If they could have got over the line against Sydney on their home deck, and who knows what that could have done for their season and where they go to from here. But still there's some question marks asked around North Melbourne. I thought they were terrific, but they had just moments in that game where if they just didn't overuse the ball and actually just played some better basic football at times, they wouldn't have handed Sydney those goals where they did get that run on. It could have been a really impactful game for the North Melbourne Footy Club.
Don't forget, on Thursday night, round 10 begins with the grand final rematch. It is budget reply night, so if you want to hear it in its entirety, stream it through ABC Listen. The place to do that, 6:30 Eastern. We're on air for the Lions and the Cats. Have a good week, Murph.
You too, Corb.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Corb.
Thanks to Anthony Furchie and to Jules Hay for all their work behind the scenes. We are out of here. You can catch up anytime on ABC AFL Daily. That was AFL Monday. If you want to listen live, you can find it on 774 ABC Melbourne and across the state of Victoria from 6:30 Eastern Time. And you can join in the conversation live on 1300 222 774.